So Exodus 2 from verse 1. Now a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slave to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. "This is one of the Hebrew babies," she said. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" "Yes, go," she answered. So the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this baby and nurse him for me. I will pay you for it." So the woman took the baby and nursed him. When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, "I drew him out of the water." The cries of our heart may not be heard by those around us. The worry of how we're going to cope that gnaws away within us night after night. The disappointment that we feel when things don't work out as we hope they would. The despair that we sometimes feel, the sense of failure, just the dullness of our hearts, or the overwhelming pressures. But God hears our cries. When we feel our guilt, when we wonder how ever we can live good lives, God hears those cries. Here at the end of chapter 2, which we didn't get to in our reading, but at the end of chapter 2, well after Moses was born, we read how the people of Israel cried out to in their need, in their slavery. And we read that God heard. And this is a key point in the book of Exodus. God hearing the cries of his people. As they cry out for help, they've been enslaved by the Egyptians, and their lives are bitter, and their groaning comes before God. In fact, well before we read of them crying out for help, God has already put into action his plan to rescue them. For over 80 years, the children of Israel will be enslaved, unaware of God's plan to rescue them. But God's plan starts with the birth of this baby, Moses, to a couple who as yet are not named. They're from the tribe of Levi. Later we find out that the names are Amram, the father, and Jochebed, the mother. But we're not told their names. They just seem an ordinary Israelite couple. And yet their son is the one whom God will use to deliver his people from slavery in Egypt. God hears the cries. The answer may not come immediately, but God does answer the cry of his people. For 80 years, Moses is preserved and prepared for the great task that God has for him. But the evil, just as the Israelites were oppressed, enslaved, so God's appointed deliverer is oppressed. He is in danger. And what we have here in these verses that we read, Exodus 2, 1 to 10, is a wonderful demonstration of how God protects, preserves his chosen person out of concern for his people Israel, and also in fulfillment of his promises that he'd made long before this to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. that their descendants would inhabit a land that would be theirs, that they would be God's people and a blessing to the world. So this week we're going to see how God protects and preserves Moses. Next week we'll see how God prepares him for this life of service. But today we're thinking about God preserving Moses. God's plan will be put into effect. Firstly then, God preserved Moses from death. Now many of us here are parents. We know the hard work it is to raise children. We've had to cope with interrupted nights. I'm looking at Steve at the moment. Temper tantrums. I'm not looking at anyone at the moment. Illnesses. How it troubles us when our children are ill. The logistical nightmares. Was it apparent you were expected to be in about three places at once? It's hard work raising children. But however difficult it may have been or may be for us, we've not had to cope with a regime that has ordered all its citizens to kill our little ones. But that's the environment into which Moses was born. What cruelty. What unspeakable fear and trauma the Israelite families were going through as their baby boys were slaughtered ruthlessly. We don't know how many tried to hide their children. We don't know what the penalty was. If they did try and hide their children, I suspect the death penalty, though we're not told. But God's hand would preserve this one, because Moses was to be God's appointed deliverer for his people Israel. God will keep this helpless newborn baby boy. How? Let's just follow the story and see how God preserves Moses from death. The first way was, well, Moses was a fine child. A lot is made of this in the Bible. Verse 2. A man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. He was healthy. He was a bonny baby, as we might say. Actually, when you look at the words that Stephen uses in Acts, he relates some of this history before he himself is martyred. He says that this baby Moses was beautiful to God. Now that may just be a turn of phrase to express that he really was a lovely, beautiful baby. But we also know that God has chosen this baby. Something special about him. There was something about this baby that gave his parents added reason to preserve him. Now, I can't go beyond that. You think, well, surely every parent would want to do everything they could to preserve any child that's born to them. I can't really explain this. Maybe, given that Hebrews 11 verse 23 in that gallery of faith tells us that by faith Moses' parents hid him because he was a fine child. Maybe, I don't know, God had impressed upon them somehow that this child was special, would do something for him. We don't know. But they act in faith as they see this was a fine child. I can't explain more than that. But we can imagine the care that they take to hide him. What have you got to do to hide a bit? Well, you've got to soundproof your house to start with. Every little gap filled with whatever they could find to try and soundproof that home. Secret hiding places, protocols that they would have if neighbors came too close of where they would hide the baby in an extra soundproof compartment within the house. We can just imagine how difficult it was, because if this baby is discovered, he'll be thrown into the Nile and drowned. He was a fine child. The next way we see how he was preserved was he was placed in a basket. Verse 3. When she, that is Moses' mother, could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the river Nile. Now, as far as I'm aware, baskets don't make the best of boats. They're full of holes. Can you imagine how carefully Jochebed, Moses' mother, is covering this with tar and pitch? Oh, she'll test out this basket many a time. Maybe she'll put stones in it that are heavy and make sure that no water is seeping in. How carefully she turns this basket into a little boat, something that will float, something that will be completely waterproof. What tears she sheds as she prepares this. What prayers she must be offering to God. For she can hide this baby no longer. He's getting too big. He's a healthy child. He's bigger and bigger each day, and louder in his cries. How carefully she places little Moses in that basket. And then, we don't know if it was under cover of darkness, but she takes that basket and places it in the water. She places it among the reeds so that it won't drift downstream, but will be trapped in the water. And it seems that she chooses the location very carefully, because members of the royal household come this way. Sometimes they bathe here. And she's hopeful as she places this baby in the water amongst the reeds of the river Nile. The next thing that is used to alive is his older sister, for she is put there to watch out for him. Verse 4. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. My observation from my family is that older sisters can be very protective of their younger ones. Like the time Hemara took one of the little ones when they were babies for their jab, and one of the older sisters was there and put herself between the baby and the nurse and said, "No jabs, no jabs." If this was Miriam, we know that Moses had an older sister called Miriam, she would have loved to be there. She is watching out. She's motivated to look out. And of course, she's the best person to do this because little girls were allowed. It was only the boys who had to be killed. She has the time. She has a heart to do this. And how well she looks out for little Moses. For then Pharaoh's daughter comes with her servants down to wash in the river. And she sees the basket. It's not so hidden that it can't be seen. Verse 5. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slave to get it. What happens next? She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. "This is one of the Hebrew babies," she said. You can just picture the scene. It's so vivid, isn't it? She opens this basket. What's inside? There's a little baby, the cutest baby you can imagine. Around 3 months. And he's crying. And everything within Pharaoh's daughter just goes out to this baby. She wants to protect him. Oh, she knows the command that her father has given. She knows this is a Hebrew baby. She says, "This is one of the Hebrew babies." Who else would seemingly abandon their baby on the river? But in spite of what her father has ordered, she can't help herself as this fine-looking child, so sweet, so cuddly, crying. She wants to help. And then listen to the sister. I mean, what a sister. Look at these words. Then his sister, she comes up and she speaks to Pharaoh's daughter. She's not awed by who she is. And she says this, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" She steps in at just the right moment. She can see that this lady is full of affection for the baby. And she has just the right thing to say. She doesn't say, "Shall I go and get her mother?" Ooh, that would be suspicious. The mother should have allowed this baby to be killed. No, she's one of the Hebrew women. Of course, there were many Hebrew women able to nurse babies whose little baby boys had been killed. And so, Pharaoh's daughter agreed. And the girl gets her mother. Doesn't tell her that this is her mother, his mother. Isn't this a wonderful story of God's protection? How well this ends. The baby protected by Pharaoh, from Pharaoh, by Pharaoh's very daughter. And the little irony at the end. "Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you." She's even going to be paid for feeding her own baby. Do you know, this is it's a prelude to what's going to happen later. When God rescues the people of Israel, they'll go through water, the Red Sea. And the Egyptians would pay them. That they would load them with gold and silver as they leave the land of Egypt. It's just a little prelude of how God is going to rescue his people. You see, God does allow difficult times for us. We read that in Psalm 34. The godly will experience troubles. You can't be in this church for long without realizing that. We preach through the scriptures, and so many parts of scriptures tell us to expect trouble in this world. We don't believe in the health, wealth, and prosperity so-called gospel. You're a Christian. You're not immune from troubles. God hasn't forgotten you. We go through difficulties, but here is the difference between the Christian and anyone else who serves his children. That doesn't mean he takes us out of those troubles immediately. 80 years at least, the people of Israel were enslaved. It doesn't mean Christians never die. Some of them, like Stephen I mentioned, was martyred, the first Christian martyr. But God does come to his people. God does help his people. And when everything looks bleak, we can still know that God is working out his plan to deliver, to provide, to bless. The people of Israel had no idea what was happening with baby Moses. No doubt they had to keep their baby secret from other families as well. No one but this family knows, we assume, that a Hebrew baby boy has been kept alive. No one knows that he's in the palace. No one knows that God's going to be preparing him. But 80 years later, he's the one who will lead the people of Israel out of slavery into their own land. God has his plan. He hears the anxious cries of your heart. What have those cries been? What have your prayers been? God understands. He knows. And though his answer may not come straight away, he's already planning, preparing that deliverance. Let this story encourage you. Be encouraged by the way in which God protected baby Moses. There are so many stories of God's wonderful protection. Let me just give you three stories from church history. I haven't told you many stories recently, have I? I know some of you like stories anyway. Athanasius, one of my favorite characters, 4th century Christian. He was a leader, and he refused, lived in Alexandria in Egypt, he refused to bow to the majority of people who had been taken in by Arius. And Arius was another Christian leader, and he was denying that Jesus was fully God. And Athanasius, who knew the Bible, refused to accept that. Emperors opposed Athanasius. At one point, the emperor said to Athanasius, "The world is against you, Athanasius." And Athanasius said, "Well, if the world is against me, then I am against the world." And so he became known as Athanasius contra munda, against the world, if you know any Latin. 5 times he was sent into exile. Often he fled to his life for his life. And God preserved him. One time he was escaping on the River Nile. We don't know if it was the same spot where Moses was put in that basket. He was escaping with others in a boat. And there were some soldiers seeking for him. They didn't know really what he looked like, but they were seeking for him. They saw these other soldiers in a boat approaching. So Athanasius turned his boat round towards them. And as their boat passed, the soldiers called out, "Have you seen Athanasius?" And Athanasius replied, "You're not far from him." And the two boats kept going like that. Great story, isn't it? Of God's protection. Fast forward to 1521. Martin Luther died of Worms. And he's condemned as a heretic. He's outlawed. The sentence is that he must be captured, probably put to death. But he was allowed safe passage. The authorities had allowed him to get to Worms safely, and they had to allow him to leave safely. On the way, he was kidnapped. But it was by friends. And they put him in the castle of Wartburg, hiding him there. No one else knew where he was. He took on a disguise, Junker Georg, George, and that's where he was. And during that time, what does he do? He translates the Bible into German. Opposition, God has his answer. Something more recently, Brother Andrew, 1957. Asked my mother about Brother Andrew. She met him when she was younger. His best friend was my parents' colleague when they were missionaries in Korea, Case Glass. Anyway, Brother Andrew, 1957, he's in his little blue Volkswagen Beetle, and he is nervous. He feels this burden to bring Bibles and gospel portions to the people behind the Iron Curtain, and he's on his way to Yugoslavia. And he comes to the border. It's against the law to bring any propaganda into this communist country, and especially no portions of the Bible. His car is stuffed full of Bibles. I mean, I don't mean literally to the top, but hidden away in every compartment where he could possibly have, behind the door panels, in his suitcase, in the tent gear. It's full of Bibles and gospel pamphlets. And he comes up to the border post. And there are two guards there. No other cars around. They've got all the time in the world. Anything to declare? Brother Andrew starts to list the things that he's got. Well, I've got some shoes, I've got my shirts, I've got a spare pair of trousers. And as he goes through all the things, and they start to search, and they go through his tent equipment, and he has to open his suitcase, and beneath the shirts are the Bibles. And suddenly he starts talking about the weather. It's so wet here, isn't it? You know, no, it was dry. They said, "Yeah, back in Holland, it's raining all the time this time of year." And he just manages to keep their attention on the weather of all things. And these two border guards, they seem to see the Bibles, but his prayer had been, "Lord, you who opened the eyes of the blind, will you blind the eyes of these guards?" And then they said, "Anything else to declare?" He said, "Oh, I've just got a few small things." "Oh, forget about the small things. You can go." And so he gets into Yugoslavia. Read God Smuggler. It's a great read. If you haven't read it to your children. It's a fantastic read. God protects his people. All three of these, Athanasius, Luther, Brother Andrew, they all lived to a good age. Brother Andrew only died last year in his 90s, 97 I think he was. They all served, just like Moses. He reached 120. God keeps his people. Let's take encouragement. You feeling discouraged this morning? You feeling life is difficult? You feeling God has forgotten you? He hasn't. He preserves his people. He keeps us. Secondly, God preserved Moses from the world. He's preserved Moses from death. Now he preserves Moses from the world. You think, so far so good. Here's Moses. He's safe in the palace of Pharaoh himself. But there's a problem. He can't be looked after by his mum forever. At some point, he's got to go. It's not just that he will have to leave home at a young age. He's also leaving people. Listen to what Stephen said about Moses in his speech in Acts chapter 7, verse 21. When Moses was placed outside, Pharaoh's daughter took him and brought him up as her own son. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in speech and action. He's going to be educated in all the wisdom of Egypt. Now, at one level, that was a good education. This was a great opportunity for Moses, an opportunity that no other Israelite would have. Of course, it was part of God's preparation for him. Egypt was a world-leading nation when it came to things like astronomy and math. Just think of how they built the pyramids. Medicine, these things were... Egypt was the top place to go. But the Egyptians didn't know the true God. And they hated the Israelites. They were ready to slaughter their baby boys. This is not a good place for Moses to be. Oh, it was hard enough for Moses' mother to place that little baby in that basket on the Nile. But now she has to take him to Pharaoh's daughter, maybe never to see him again. As far as I can tell, there's no record that he ever saw his parents again. I'm not saying that's for sure, but I just couldn't find anywhere where it says that. So verse 10, when the child grew older, his mother took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, In our family, when it came time for the three-year-old to go to preschool, it was always my job to take them on the first day. Not because I always did the school run, but because it was too difficult for Hamara to let go of them. It was just for a short time. Can you imagine what it's like for Jochebed taking little Moses to that palace? Can you imagine how awful she feels? Not only is she going to miss her little boy, but no one is going to tell him about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. No one is going to explain to him the promises that God had made to his forefathers. No one is going to teach that little boy how to pray. No one is going to tell him about the creator of the universe, about the love of God, about where to turn when they're going through difficulty. Instead, he's going to learn about false gods. He's going to be given false hopes. He's going to be told false ways of living, sinful ways of living. After all, if this is a palace from which that order can come to kill baby boys, what other sinful things are going to come out of such a place? And we can only imagine the fears that Moses' parents have as they have to let him go. Will he follow the one true living God? Will he believe the promises made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Well, if Moses' parents acted in faith as they hid their little baby, as Hebrews 11 verse 23 tell us, so too they act in faith now, as Jochebed takes that little boy to Pharaoh's daughter. You know, if Jochebed had been so careful in preparing that papyrus basket to make it fit for the waters of the Nile, would she not also be careful, so careful, to prepare this little boy's heart and mind for life in an ungodly world? Oh, from infancy, from before he could talk, from before he could really understand, she would have been speaking to him as she fed him and telling him of God, telling this little one of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob, of the promises that God had made to them. Oh, she would have instilled in his young heart something of the goodness of God. Oh, and what prayers she would have prayed over him as she held him in her arms. And then she has to commit him to God. But it worked. How do I know? Look at chapter 3 in verse 6. And God is meeting with Moses. He's 80 years of age now. He's been away from his people. He's not spent time with the Israelites. But God says to him, I'm the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses doesn't say, well, who are they? Moses knows who they are. It seems to me it's because his mother told him when he was so little. How else do I know that? Because as the years go by, as the decades go by, at the age of 40, out to see his people. We didn't read verse 11. One day after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. Now this wasn't just an afternoon stroll. Oh, where shall I go today? I'll take my walk and, oh, there are these slaves. Let's see them working. No, no, it's not that at all. Moses very deliberately goes to his people. He knows that they are his people. And we read that he was rejecting, Hebrews chapter 11, the wealth and the privileges of Egypt. He was choosing to identify with God's people even in their affliction. Let me read to you Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 24. By faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be ill-treated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. His parents' faith had been rewarded. Their prayers had been answered. There was a Christian mother who prayed earnestly for her son. But it seemed the more that she prayed for him, the further he went from God, living a life of sinful pleasure, sexually immoral. It was breaking her heart. She went to a local bishop and begged that the bishop would talk with her son, who loved to have intellectual conversation and philosophy. And, well, please, can you go and talk with him and show him a better way? But the bishop refused. He said, I'm not going to go. There's no point in me going while he's unwilling to listen. What's the point of talking to someone who doesn't want to hear? It'll only do more harm than good. But he did say this to her. Go your way, as you live, it cannot be that the son of these tears should perish. And she took encouragement from those words. She continued to pray. And eventually, Monica, for that was her name, when her son was in his early 30s, he was converted. This was Augustine. Apparently we have 5 million of his words still in writing. His confessions, in which he tells not just about his mother, but about how he was converted, all he went through. Those words have helped thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. A mother's prayer. Moses was 40, if we're going to call it his conversion. You see, ultimately his heart was not won by the world. Oh, he had still a lot to learn. It would be another 40 years before he was ready to deliver Israel. But let's be encouraged as we think of our children. Let us do all we can to pray for them, to shed tears for them, to fill their hearts and minds with the truth of God. Who else is going to do that? Can't expect teachers at school to do that. They're not allowed. As parents, we do that. And let's be examples to our children. Examples of godliness. Let's show them how to live. Let's show them the reality of God in our lives. That's how children learn. Imagine you had to make that basket waterproof for the River Nile to put your baby in. You would be so careful. I know. Have the same diligence in praying, in instructing, in being an example to your children. They will pick up from your behavior what really matters. And let us take encouragement from how God kept Moses. Let us trust God to keep our children as they go through their education system, as they leave home. Let's entrust them to God, that one day our children, each one of them, will be eager, willing to identify themselves with God's people, not to live for the fleeting pleasures of sin, but to follow the living, glorious God. One more thing from these verses. It's the parallels with the birth of Jesus. Like Moses, Jesus too was born in very difficult circumstances with a murderous king who was killing the baby boys. King Herod issued that decree that all the baby boys under the age of two in the region of Bethlehem should be slaughtered. And there was wailing, there was weeping, there was great anguish of heart in that part of Israel at that time, just as there was in Egypt. Where does Jesus flee to? Where do his parents take? They take him to Egypt. This too is where Moses was. They even had an unusual cot, a little basket on a river, a manger surrounded by the animals. So many parallels. You see, the experiences that Moses goes through are showing us that he is prefiguring Jesus. He's a type of Christ. And as we look at the life of Moses, we are to see that his life points us to the greater deliverer, to Jesus himself. Just as Israel needed freedom from slavery, and Moses would be the one God used to bring those people out of slavery, so Jesus is the one who frees us from an even deeper slavery. Jesus said, whoever sins is a slave to sin. Just try it for a day. Try and have perfect thoughts all day. What is good and selfless and loving? You can't. I'm sorry. And the reason you can't because it's because you're a sinner. We have the phrase, don't we? No one is perfect. Absolutely right. No one is perfect except for God. We're enslaved by sin. That's why there's trouble in the world. That's why there's war in Ukraine. That's why there's a cost of living crisis. Ultimately, it's because of my heart. I am a sinner. I am selfish. I don't want to submit to God. And I can't free myself. I'm guilty, and I can't take away that guilt, however much psychology I use. I'm facing God's judgment, his eternal punishment. And I cannot free myself. But Jesus can. He is the deliverer whom God has sent into this world, whom God preserved, whom God sent long before we were born. The cries of our heart, whatever they may be, whatever you thought of when I started preaching earlier this morning, ultimately the answer to the cries of your heart only come through Jesus Christ. The pressures of this life, the fears and worries that you have, ultimately Jesus is the answer to that. Because it's sin that has ruined this world. Sin that causes those pressures, those worries, those things that are so difficult. And Jesus Christ came to destroy the devil and to do away with sin. Sin has ruined this world and has ruined each one of us. It holds us in its grip, in its guilt, and the judgment we face. That is your real worry. That's what should really cause you to feel stress. That's the real danger. But there's a deliverer, and his name is Jesus. God preserved him so that he could save you. So go to Jesus Christ. Put your faith in him. Follow him. And Jesus said, if the Son, referring to himself, if the Son will make you free, you will really be free. Free from the guilt of sin. Free from the grip and the power of sin. Free from the punishment that is due to you because Jesus took it himself. And Jesus lived that perfect life on your behalf. And united to him, you will be perfect. And you will be his forever. In your distress, in your anxiety, turn to the Savior. Let's pray.